Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
We're rolling out the Friday the 13th edition of Sports Time Radio. Did I say edition? Edition of Sports Time Radio. And anyways, I did say Friday, so let's hope this goes okay.
Start spreading the news.
Now the other question is, did the switchboard actually bring Stu in? Stu, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
All right. There you go. So far, so good. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link. Get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still don't have Stu on Twitter yet, but feel free to hunt me down at Burke Time, and I will gladly pass along any message you have for Stu. So there you go. All right. Well, last night, Stu, they finished handing out the regular season awards in Major League Baseball, and they wrapped things up with the MVP voting. And not surprisingly, if you've watched 5 or 10 minutes of the MLB Network, you knew that Freddie Freeman was going to win the National League MVP, and he did quite handily. He got 28 out of 30 first-place votes. Mookie Betts got the other two. So it was Freeman first, Betts second, and Manny Machado a distant third, like I predicted yesterday. What I find really interesting is two Cubs got votes. Now, you know, you vote for 10 guys. Ian Happ got a 10th place vote. And, Stu, I really need you to explain to me how Ryan, I'm guessing it's Tapia or Terpia got a MVP vote.
Well, there's some kind of a mistake. I saw something a little bit about that. There's some kind of mistake the writer, one of the writers did, and both Cubs were quite amused by these errors that they made and their ballots. And some kind of, I don't know if it was a typing error or something they did incorrectly when they fill out the ballot, and that great relief pitcher of the Cubs got a vote.
Yeah,
and a salary for next season.
Yeah, oddly, it was a St. Louis writer, a gentleman by the name of Rick Hummel, who represents the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who gave Tapia that 10th place vote. Ian Happ's came from Joe Frisario, MLB.com in Miami. So I thought that was really very interesting when I saw the names pop up there. And I know Happ went on Twitter and told the guy that he was the greatest baseball writer ever, which I thought was very humorous. But
you
Darvish did get some votes as well. So three Cubs found their way into the voting. But no, you're not, you know, not surprised at all that Freeman ran away with this.
No, that was a foregone conclusion, and I'm more elated about the fact that Abreu won in the American League, which I think was well deserved.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the next one. Of course, we're going to. I was actually a little concerned if Abreu was going to find a way to win the award, because there was a lot of late kind of rush for Jose Ramirez. But in the end, it was another one that didn't end up, you know, really too close. Abreu got 21 of the 30 first place votes. Ramirez got 8, and DJ LeMahieu picked up 1. the saddest thing for me about all this is the first thing I saw this morning was somebody talking about Mike Trout finishing fifth. And it's like, is that really important? Shouldn't we be talking about Abreu winning the award?
Yeah, I mean, Trout's a great player. He's one of the faces, the major faces of baseball, but he didn't deserve to win the award this year, and why talk about that, him coming in fifth, when they should be talking about Abreu, who was almost a runaway winner in the voting in the American League, getting 70% of the first-place votes.
Yeah, you know, it's so odd with these guys when it comes to Trout, and I mean, when you look at the four guys he finished behind, it was Abreu, Ramirez, LeMahieu, and then Shane Bieber. I honestly thought Bieber was going to be in the top three with the year he had. They all had better years than Trout, and all three of those teams, because two of them are Indians, managed to get into the playoffs while the Angels couldn't even find their way into an expanded version of the playoffs. So, hoping your team win has got to count for something. You know, I know all they want to look at is the analytic numbers, and they really don't care what happens on the field anymore. But, man, you've got to get your head out of your rear end and check out what goes on. And, who, you know, there's a difference between being most valuable and the best player. If you've given the award to the best player every year, Trout would win it every year. He's the best player in baseball. But Abreu, you know, he was much more valuable to that young team. And, you know, while they did struggle to hang on to a playoff spot, they did still get there. And he deserves a lot of credit for getting them there.
Yeah, and he's battled for years on a subpar team. And it's nice to see him finally win the award with a team that's so much improved like the White Sox are.
You know, I mean, what was, you know, kind of a surprising to me is I'm really impressed that there wasn't some moron out there who would give Trout a first-place vote. You know, because there's always one of these idiots sitting out there with a ballot going, oh, yeah, Trout's the best player. But it was really, you know, it was just Abreu, Ramirez, and LeMahieu who got the first-place votes. And no surprise, LeMahieu's first-place vote came from a New York writer. You know, that doesn't shock me at all.
No.
You know, while he had a good year, I don't think he was the first choice.
Well, let's be objective about him. Like you said, Trout may be the best player in baseball, but his stats for this year, were they really MVP worthy?
You know, they weren't bad. I'll go get them here so we can see them. So, you know, he was good. You know, I mean, he's always good. It's not like you're going to get a bad year out of Mike Trout, but he wasn't the dominant player that he had been in some years that he has won it. So let's see what we got here for him. All right. He played in 53 games. He hit .281 with 17 homers and 46 RBIs. So,
yeah, for some players that would be a career year, but that's just an average season for him, and it's certainly doesn't compare to what Abreu did for the White Sox.
No, and, you know, and I mean, when you look at Trout, he's actually almost 25 points under his career batting average. So, you know, it wasn't what you would say, you know, it literally wasn't a Mike Trout type of year. You know, yeah, he had a lot of home runs, but so did a lot of guys. You know, the ball was clearly gassed up because they wanted the excitement. So, you know, it was just one of those things. That's what we were going to get. And
can you say this, that for some players, it would be a great year. But would you say that for Mike Trout, it was kind of a down season for him based on what he'd done in the past?
You know, I don't know if I would call it down, you know, because it's not like he stunk. You know, we're not talking about a guy who was just
not
horrible at the plate. You know, he didn't have a, you know, a Chris Bryant type of year, you know, a guy who used to be an MVP that just can't seem to hit the ball anymore. You know, and like, you know, his saber net metric numbers were good. You know, the stuff they look at, he was third in on base, you know, on base plus slugging, you know, and some of the other orders there, but you know, it just wasn't, you know, it just wasn't his year. I mean, you know, he had the 17 homers, but you look and he only had 9 doubles. A lot, you know, there were a lot of guys in double digits and doubles. He did have 2 triples, which of course would be right among the league leaders, but you add in 56 strikeouts, the 35 walks, and oddly just 1 stolen base for Mike Trout, which is really low.
Very low for him. Well, would you say that maybe his selection of coming in fifth was kind of a fair number for him based on what he'd done in the past and what he did for this year?
Yeah, you know, I kind of figured, you know, you look at the guys he was up against, LeMahieu hit 364 and led baseball in on-base plus slugging. You know, he had 10 bombs, but he's not a huge home run hitter, but the average is so much better. Ramirez hit the same number of home runs as Trout and had the same number of RBIs, plus he hit 292 and he stole 10 bases. Abreu, who won the award, hit 317, had more homers than Trout with 19, and led baseball in RBIs with 60. He was fifth in OPS plus slugging. So when, you know, when you start looking at Trout's numbers against the guys who were there, you can't argue with this.
No.
You know, just
no,
because Mike Trout wasn't garnering you the award, you know, then you look at it, Abreu played in every game. Ramirez played in 58 of them. You know, LeMahieu played in 50, so Trout only played in 3 more. You can't really argue that he had a better year than any of those guys. You know, is he a better player? And if I was starting a team, would I take Trout over all 3 of those guys? Oh, yeah, definitely. But they had better years.
Yeah, well, don't forget Trout is younger than those players too, right? And he's a lot younger than Abreu, for example. And he's got a long,
Ramirez.
Long future ahead of him, a great future ahead of him.
Ramirez. So,
I don't know what it is. Baseball writers, they seem to get fixated on one or two players in the leagues, and that's all they talk about then for the rest of the season. And certainly in the case of the American League, Trout is always number one on the list of who's the best player in the American League, and that's probably with some justification.
Yeah, and, you know, sadly, a lot of that is the fault of the MLB Network. You know, they grab a guy and they focus on a guy, and this is the only guy they talk about on every show. So, you know, it makes it difficult for, you know, the average fan, or, you know, a lot of these writers, let's face it, just don't pay that much attention. You know, I think I mentioned the other day there was some idiot who actually left Luis Robert off his ballot for Rookie of the Year. Tell me there were 5 better rookies than Luis Robert. So, you know, there's a lot of stupidity when it comes to this voting. And, like Dan said, it's less of an award these days than it is just kind of who the media focuses on.
Yeah, especially when it comes to 2 or 3 players in both leagues that they seem to focus on year after year after year, despite these players that they focus on, they may have a down year, but they'll still be in the minds of the baseball writers as to be in contention for the most valuable year after year after year, even though they don't always warrant it.
So, you know, and that'll be the thing. You know, a guy like Trout will always finish in the top 10, you know, maybe even top 5 like he did this year, just because they know his name and he'll always be the focus of what is going on in baseball.
Yep.
You know, even though he's on the West Coast and a lot of people don't really get to see him, you know, they are always going to shove him down your throat. So, you know, that kind of how it goes, but you know, I mean, he didn't really have that much better of a year than Nelson Cruz did with the Twins, and Cruz helped the Twins get to the playoffs again. I'll say it, the playoffs were expanded. We had more teams, and the Angels still couldn't get in. So
yeah, they didn't come close to qualifying for a playoff spot.
Yeah. You know, and I mean that when it comes to most valuable player, you know, while it shouldn't feature everything, if it's close between two players, where a team finishes should have something to do with it. So, you know, because like, you know, if you take Trout off the Angels, they still don't make the playoffs. If you take Abreu off the White Sox, they ain't getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, well, if they may have an outside chance of getting into the playoffs this past season without Abreu, but it would be iffy at best.
So, you know, just want, you know, and again, you know, the Angels finished, you know, 8 games under 500. They were 26-34. You know, and I know the first thing they say when they start to talk about Mike Trout is, well, you know, the record doesn't matter. It's the player. But yet, if it's another guy, they will use that record against them. I remember the year Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown, there were guys pushing for Trout to win the MVP, and there were a lot of guys pushing for it, even though, you know, we hadn't won a Triple Crown since, what, I think it was Yastrzemski in 1967. And one of the things they threw up was that Trout was a better defender and a better base runner. And it was like, well, how does that make up for winning the Triple Crown? Of course he's a better defender. He's an outfielder. Cabrera plays first base. Of course he's a better base runner. Cabrera's a giant man compared to Trout. So,
yeah, and I disagree sometimes with the baseball writers. I've always been of the opinion that if you're the MVP, your team has improved drastically in the standings because of you. And the players and the baseball writers don't always think that way. Of course, I always point out when Ernie Banks won back-to-back years, did the Cubs make the playoffs those two seasons?
Yeah.
I don't think
so.
No,
they were in last, right?
Yeah, they were consistent, right? So it's not always but I think that should be a factor when they make the final choice. Now, how their team having a great year by a player actually improve a team one or two places in the standings, but it doesn't seem to always work that way when they make the selections.
No, you know, and I mean, I understand there are times where a guy has such a year that you can't deny him the award. You know, like the year Alex Rodriguez won it and Texas finished in last, his numbers were just so out of this world. And of course we know why. He was gassed up on a bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
but we didn't know that.
That always helps.
We thought he was having a phenomenal year. So, you know, I can understand, you know, why he won that. You know, that made perfect sense. He was easily the best player in the league that year, far and away. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of times, again, you know, they just get hooked. They get so hooked up with the damn, well, look at his analytic. No, look at what analytics say about this guy. Well, yeah, but look at what he did on the field. You know, I mean, you just can't plug the numbers into the computer and say that. You have to watch the games and watch the players. And I'm willing to bet I would bet a majority of these writers that vote don't.
Yeah, like we've always said, that there are certain things in analytics that don't compare to what a player does on the field. There are certain intangibles that the truly great players have that aren't factored into analytics.
So, yeah, just kind of, you know, they need to get over this. I mean, I know they won't anytime soon, but they need to. So, you know, but we did also had some history today in baseball, and I'm kind of interested to see how this works out. But the Miami Marlins hired Kim, and I believe they're pronouncing it, is it just Ning or Nen or however? It's just NG is her last name.
NG, yeah, NG, that's right.
Obviously. The first woman hired to be a general manager. I believe she's also the first Asian American to be hired to be a general manager. So, a couple interesting things. What I am kind of curious on is, you know, how much decision making she's going to be given. Because if, you know, like here locally, technically Jed Hoyer is the general manager of the Cubs, but you can't tell me that Theo Epstein doesn't make all the decisions. So I hope Derek Jeter doesn't just like quash her and allow her to actually handle the general manager duties. So, obviously it's a great hire and it's a huge step for professional sports. So, I'm interested to see how it turns out with a team that really had a surprising year. And oddly enough, she got her start in baseball with the White Sox back in 1990. So,
well, you hope she's not just a figurehead, like you pointed out. And that would be too bad if that's the case. And she's been around, though, quite a few years and does she really have the qualifications to do the job that she was hired for, though? You think she's that talented to step in and do that job on a professional level? I'm not so sure.
And it looks like the last name is pronounced Ang. You add an A, and it's A-N-G, so it would be Ang, Kim Ang. I kind of look at it, the Angels announced their general manager hire yesterday. And it was actually somebody who started out as a clubhouse, a bat boy, then a clubhouse person. So, she's been in the game for 30 years. So, they've seen a lot. You just never know if it'll translate to the front office. And, hopefully it does. But, let's face it. I don't expect the Marlins to be in the playoffs next year.
You think this was an aberration for 2020?
Yeah, I honestly think if we'd have played 162 games, they wouldn't have made it.
Probably not.
But it was a fantastic story. You got to talk about this team that had players that nobody, there were fans that didn't even know who some of them were. And then to go out and actually win a playoff series, I know there were a lot of people who just thought, oh, yeah, okay, great. They kind of got lucky and they got in, but they're going to get beat two straight because they're playing a team that's better than them. And then they turn around and manage to get a win. But, even if you look at it, they were 31-29. And let's face it, their division stunk. The Phillies were under 500, the Mets were under 500, the Nationals were under 500. The only team that was decent in the division were the Braves. So,
yeah, I would be very surprised if they qualify for a wild card in 2021.
I think I see them going back to, again, if we play the full season. Because with 60 games, you never know what can happen. That was just one of those odd little anomalies in baseball that Miami got in. But, like I said, again, it's a fantastic story. You look at them going, hey, cool, look at this team. I hope she does a good job, obviously. It would be nice to see, but other than that, they're it's not like free agents are going to go flocking there, and they're not going to sign Trevor Bauer or something like that. So we'll see if she can make a difference, or again if Derek Jeter is just the dominant guy there, and she's the new Jed Hoyer.
If there is a full season in 2021, can you see them winning 75 to 80 games next season?
Oh, maybe 75. I'm not going anywhere close to 500 with them. They'll be, minimum 5 to 10 games under. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost 100 games.
Yeah, on paper, they don't look all that impressive.
No. And I know they have some good young pitching. So, it's possible that, you know, they could be better, but I just, you know, that division is too, and of course the off season has to play out, but you know, you do wonder if the Mets do spend ridiculous money like their owner is talking and they get a healthy Noah Syndergaard. I mean, you're looking at a rotation that already features DeGrom, Syndergaard, Marcus Stroman, and Steven Matz. You know, if they were to add, say, Trevor Bauer or one of the other top pitchers, that automatically puts them in contention with a rotation like that. You know, if they add the catcher, be it Realmuto, or there are some Yadi Molina rumors the Mets are interested, that's going to be another gigantic help for them, even though I just don't see Molina leaving St. Louis. But I know both the Mets and the Yankees are very interested in adding him. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, and the Phillies are another team. They got a lot of talent. You know, if they can piece it together, you got to think, you know, while I don't think they're a playoff team, they're better than the Marlins.
Yeah, I guess the Marlins will probably be back in the usual spot next season, if it's a regular season, in the fifth place.
You know, I mean, maybe they could be better than the Nationals, who seem to kind of be floundering now, but I don't even know if I buy that one. So...
yeah, I think the Nationals are still going to be better than them. Didn't the Nationals miss a couple of players opt out for the Nationals for this season because of the corona?
Yeah, and, you know, unsurprisingly, Steven Strasburg got hurt again. So, that kind of hurt them. But they seemed like they were in a little bit of disarray. So you wonder if maybe they could get things back together. It's just so... You know, baseball can be so weird because, you know, sometimes a team just gets on a bad run and they just can't shake it. So, you know, we'll have to see how it works out. But I fully expect the Marlins to be a last place team. And, we'll see how it works out for her.
Yeah, one can only hope there's a full season in 2021.
Yeah. Hopefully, or at least we get closer to it than this, you know, ridiculous 60-game abomination that, you know, we had last year. So,
well, if there's a vaccine available next April, we'll be ready to go. Everything's back to normal again.
Hopefully, you know, that's, yeah. Obviously, you know, I think everybody is kind of hoping that comes true, so... You know, we'll see how it goes.
Right, exactly right.
Yeah, just some fun baseball stuff. But you know, like I said, I mean, it's nice to see the hire. You know, now we just got to see how it works out. So.
And what jobs has she done for the last 30 years in baseball? Because I wasn't really all that familiar with her. What type of job has he done in management?
You know, it looked like a little bit of kind of everything from scouting to, working just, in the front office doing, pretty much anything they asked her to, because she started as an intern. And, you know how it goes when you're an intern, you just kind of get dumped into wherever it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks like she's kind of bounced around in the different departments, like a lot of general managers have done. You know, like I mentioned, the guy the Angels just hired, who I can't seem to find his name here, but his dad was the Rangers clubhouse manager for years, so that got him in as a bat boy. And then he ended up being, working in the clubhouse, and then he got into the front office organization. And just slowly worked his way up to assistant general manager. And, you know, she did kind of a similar thing. You know, you start off as an intern and, you know, you just slowly but surely work your way up into, different positions or, different areas. And, you know, here you go. You're looking at it like, oh, hey, wow, you know, you're a general manager. Good Lord.
Yeah, it'll be most interesting to see how much power she actually wields next year, or as you pointed out, possibly is she a glorified figurehead.
Yeah, that's really what I'm interested in, is to see, you know, how she's treated. And I know that obviously, you know, we're not going to be privy to that information. But, you know, still when, you know, no, you know, and nothing against her, you know, I mean, obviously we don't know her personally, but, you know, when you look at the Marlins, the first thing you think of is Derek Jeter. You don't think, you know, Kim Ng. It's not going to be the name that jumps out at you. You know, because just like if you ask anybody on the street who the Cubs general manager is, what are they going to say?
Yeah, well, of course they're gonna pick the right choice, the wrong person, right?
You know, because of the way the team is structured and run, they're going to say Theo Epstein, where technically he's the president of baseball operations, like Derek Jeter, and Jed Hoyer is the general manager.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and that's. You know, one of the things I'm interested with the White Sox now in this new hire is apparently La Russa has been given a lot of personnel control. So who gets to make the decisions? The guy who built the team, Rick Hahn, or the guy you just brought in who's almost 80 and going to manage your team?
Yeah, and he's also coming in with a little bit of baggage too, but which, of course, will – wasn't addressed all that much by the White Sox, but I guess when it comes to trial, it'll probably be dropped, or community service, or it'll be minimized. I don't think his blood alcohol level was all that high when he was arrested. Maybe a little over 0.08.
Yeah, it was 0.095, but the issue with that is the fact that he refused to take the test on the scene. So he may have actually been higher than that. They didn't actually take the test until they got to the police station. So, you know, there's a little issue with that. And, you know, to be fair, though, I do like the way the White Sox are handling this, because, it, you know, like they came out yesterday and said that they're going to let the courts do their job. And this is exactly what they need to do. You know, I mean, while it is a very serious offense, you know, we're not looking at one of these cases where he beat his wife or his girlfriend or fiance. You know, it's nothing like that where they have to make an immediate decision and suspend the guy. Let the Arizona court handle it and fine him and suspend his license. And, you know, I mean, obviously if I'm the White Sox, the first thing I did was I hired him a driver, because I'm not letting him get behind the wheel again. But, you know, and, you know, that's, you know, and again, this is the way it should be. They don't need to be judge and jury in a situation like this, where, you know, kind of the Ravens had to do that with Ray Rice. And, you know, there have been other teams that kind of said, hey, we've got to suspend this guy immediately. You know, the Adrian Peterson situation, you know, things like that. This is different. Because, you know, luckily he didn't hit anybody. He didn't kill anybody. It was just him alone. Stupid.
And is there a specific court date as to when his case is going to be heard?
You know, there is a date, but with obviously all the COVID-19 stuff, it's going to be probably kind of flexible. And my guess is his attorney will go out and ask for as many continuances as he can get. So I don't see this being heard for a while. I'm sure, like you said, they're going to try to settle and get some community service and whatever the fine is. But in all honesty, it's his second one. I hope they take his license away, because God forbid he gets behind the wheel and kills himself or somebody else. So it's time.
The first one took place, 10, 12 years ago, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Not that excuses what he did, but it always bothers me when a celebrity uses the stock line when they're stopped, you know who I am, type of thing.
Yeah. who I am. So,
yeah, you know who I am. I'm like a Hall of Famer. I think he said something like that. I'm a Hall of Famer and all that good stuff. I'm sure the police were duly impressed by his comments.
Yeah, you know, I was. You know, that I would have just been thrilled. So, yeah, it looks like his first DUI was in 2011. Is that what they got here? Oh, no, 2007.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the Cardinals didn't fire him. So, you know, he ended up managing there five more years. So, you know, I don't know why the White Sox have to fire him when the Cardinals didn't.
Well, I don't think they'll fire him for this one. And they'll probably keep it under close observation for the future.
Yeah, and you know that again, like I said, that's something they should. I mean, obviously, you know, this is very, I would love to see the White Sox make him go to alcohol counseling, you know, because you've got to wonder, even though they're so far apart. I mean, we're talking 13 years. You've got to wonder if there's an underlying problem there that nobody knows about, because you know, like for years I had a friend who was an alcoholic. And I guess technically he's still my friend, even though he's been dead for like 5 years. He finally drank himself to death. And what I learned about it is they're very good at hiding it. So, you know, I would love to see him get some counseling. Maybe that'll be part of his mandated, you know, court, whatever the court comes down on him with. But yeah, I'd prefer to see him get help rather than hurt himself or somebody else.
And that's probably what will happen. And as you well know, the American public are forgiving. We're very forgiving people. And since no one was hurt this time, I think in time it'll be forgotten, especially if he does a good job for the White Sox as a manager.
Yeah. You know, that's going to be the thing. You know, unfortunately, there are a lot of athletes that have had this happen to them. So, it's a way of life. I mean, there'll probably be multiple DUIs in the town I live in this weekend. Unfortunately, it's just something that happens. So, but like those people, you know, you don't hear everybody coming out and say those people should be fired. And I get that La Russa is, somebody you recognize, a name you recognize, but this isn't a fireable offense. You know, it's just stupidity more than anything else.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see how he does when the next year's season starts. We're assuming it's a full season, and how he relates to the younger players. And as I mentioned, I think in the email, one good thing that he has in his favor is that he's bilingual. He's very fluent in Spanish, and that will really help him out tremendously.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many questions with this hire that, you know, it's just, you don't even know where to start with this. You know, personally, I didn't like the hire, but I understand there wasn't once you take Alex Cora and AJ Hinch off the board, there weren't a lot of really top tier managers out there. So, you know, you went and you got a name guy, you know, otherwise they would have been hiring somebody that a lot of people probably wouldn't have even known.
No. And I think this hiring is done because of Reinsdorf, and he always regretted the fact that Hawk Harrelson fired La Russa so many years ago and all the success he had after that. And he always wanted to bring him back into the fold, and I guess this is the opportune time for him to do it.
So, it's definitely a Jerry Reinsdorf thing. And, you know, I mean, again, you look at it and you're looking at a manager with, you know, a fantastic resume. You just got to kind of hope that he can relate to today's players and how the game has changed. I emailed you about, I was really surprised about how many players actually seem to get their feelings hurt that La Russa hadn't called them yet. And all I kept thinking to myself is, you're a grown man. Why do you need a reassuring call from your manager? Just go do your frickin' job and get ready for next year. But again, it's a new age player, and feelings are very important. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's like you said, that's the generation we're living in right now, and is that going to impact their performance in the field? I don't think so, but maybe he'll have a team meeting when he comes aboard and say, and welcoming the players and saying what kind of a great job we're going to do together.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of hoping it wouldn't affect their play, but, you know, I always go back to the point about Anthony Rizzo pointing out that the Cubs were actually concerned who would be on their team next year while they were in the middle of last season. And, you know, you wonder if emotionally that affected them. You know, the White Sox are a younger, you know, you would think more vulnerable team to something like this. I hope it doesn't affect them because they have a lot of talent. But
yeah, they sure do.
You've got to wonder, you know, if it might, you know, because Tim Anderson was one of the guys who said that. And if there's, he may be the most emotional player in baseball. You know, you've got to wonder if maybe he's a little upset by this, it'll affect his game.
No, I think he'll use it as a rallying cry and continue to do the great job he's done for the past couple of seasons.
You know, and to be fair, there's probably a chance La Russa was dealing with his legal issues and just didn't get around to calling players. So, you know, there's also the fact that he had to put together his coaching staff. You know, they still need, you know, they did hire a pitching coach yesterday, but, you know, they need the, you know, the bench coach, the base coaches, you know, the guys who coordinate the defense, all that stuff. You know, they're still looking for those guys. So nothing against calling players, but I would like to kind of get my coaching staff in order first.
And which he's in the process of doing, of course. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how the players relate to the new manager, the new coaches, and everything else when it comes down to when the season starts next year. Because now they taste it as a success. Now they know they could win. And are they going to be professional enough to say, well, there's been some changes in coaching and the manager, but we have a great team and we're going to continue to compete at a high level and compete for at least a division championship for 2021, no matter who's the manager, no matter who is the new pitching coach or whatever coach they bring aboard.
Well, you know, what did stick out to me with this pitching coach hire is the guy they hired is just 37. So I'm wondering if they're going to go out and hire a young coaching staff to try to maybe bridge the gap between the 76-year-old La Russa and kind of the new style baseball players. So I will be interested to see who else they bring in to kind of round out this staff.
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up. I think you're onto something there. I think you're right. I think they will probably try to go young in terms of the coaching staff as a kind of a counterbalance to a 76-year-old manager.
So, and to be fair, you know, like Joe Maddon is technically an older manager, but he's very, you know, up to date on like what's going on, and he knows how to relate to the new players. La Russa is much more what you would call hard line and what they would describe as old school. There, he's not going to be as relatable as a Joe Maddon is. So they're going to need that, you know, that guy, be it the bench coach or, you know, just one of the guys who, you know, maybe lines the defense up or somebody like that, you know, that the players can kind of turn to and be like, okay, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah,
so,
that's why I say, yeah, I think you're on the right track here, and I think that's going to be their hiring over the next week or two. They're going to be going young in terms of the coaching staff.
though. But, you know, interestingly, you know, it is November, but oddly, it's Masters weekend, as weird as that is to say. And they almost have two rounds in the books. You know, obviously with the time change, it gets dark in, you know, Georgia earlier, just like it does here. But they have a four-way tie at the top of the leaderboard at 9-under. It's Abraham Answer, Cameron Smith, Justin Thomas, and Dustin Johnson, all tied for the lead at 9-under. Tiger Woods is at 4-under, because I know that's what everybody really wants to know, is where Tiger is. But, yeah, have you turned it on or checked it out? I did watch a little of it today, but not too much because it's really early. I'll watch more over the weekend. But
yeah,
have you looked at any of
nothing really strange. Of course, Woods definitely is in contention, being 4-under. But how far under are the leaders at the moment?
He's 5 shots behind the leaders.
Well, that's a lot to make up, but it can be done.
And
he played
very
poorly. Since he won the Masters, he hasn't played very well.
No, he has. He just finished a 10th, so he still has the whole back nine to play to finish round two. So he could even make up some more ground on them, depending on how it goes. You know, and I'm looking for – I can't – here we go. You know, the other guy everybody was excited about was Bryson DeChambeau. And I don't know how much you follow golf, but this is the guy who basically turned himself into a bodybuilder and is just hitting these monster drives. Unfortunately, it's not working out too well for him. He does still have some holes to play, but currently he's 1-over in the second round, and as of right now, he'll miss the cut. So he's going to have to play some good golf down the stretch just to get to play the final 2 days. So...
Well, you can be a long range hitter, 300 yards plus, but if you don't have a good short game, good with your irons, it's going to be very difficult for you to compete and be in contention.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the thing. I mean, when people talk about it, DeChambeau has really played very well. You know, he's really turned not only his body but his game around, and I believe he's won multiple tournaments this year. But, you know, the thing, like I always, you know, not too many people I know talk about golf, but the thing I always tell them is there's a reason why you don't see the guys who win the long drive championships on the PGA Tour, because basically all they can do is drive the ball. And golf is a whole lot more than that.
Yeah, it's a lot more difficult than that. If it was just relying on the long distance drivers, the game would be a lot different. And I haven't played too many times myself, very, very few times over the course of my life, but I was never very good. But I'm sure you can probably drive a ball 280 at least, 290.
Yeah, you know, I used to play quite a bit, and I was okay. You know, I was to the point where, you know, I would shoot 80 on a 72-hole course, so I would be like 8 over. But, you know, I wasn't out there playing every day. You know, like these guys are, it wasn't my, you know, my living. You know, we played generally, if we were lucky, once a week or once every couple weeks. But, yeah, when I could swing the club, now with the arthritic shoulder, I can't even swing the damn club anymore. But, yeah, I could get it, you know, I could get it out there pretty far, and that was helpful. But, you know, my struggles were the short game after that. You know, it's easy to grip it and rip it, but... And other than that, it gets tough.
That's the lament of the average golfer. I mean, you could drive the ball 280, but if your short game is weak, you're not going to have a great score. But 80 is very respectable, though. That's a very good number, and I'm sure you've probably broken a few times in the course of your golf play.
Yeah, you know, once or twice. You know, I managed to do that. You know, never had a hole in one or anything like that. But you know, it was something. You know, honestly, it was something I wish I could still do. I wish I could still swing the club. I would probably play a little bit. But yeah, unfortunately, my other career prevents me from doing that, or my other former career, I should say.
Right, and Yeah, the bumps and bruises certainly take their toll over the years. And but that's the price you pay for becoming a major star in the Chicago area.
Yeah, there you go. That's my claim to fame. But you know, I just saw this story, and maybe you can enlighten me a little bit, because I don't know when it came up, but I saw today that Matt Nagy said he is going to hand over play calling duties to the offensive coordinator. Unfortunately, I don't think it will help the Bears at all, but did you hear any of this, or do you know when this story broke? Because I didn't hear anything overnight on the local sports station.
No, I know it's been discussed over the last few games. It's been brought up a few times, and he seemed reluctant to do that, but maybe he finally determined that it changes in order. And I have to agree with you. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference in their offensive output.
No, I doubt it. And, you know, they do have the Monday night this week against Minnesota. Do you have them getting back on track and getting a win, or do you have the Vikings taking it to them?
They seem to do very well against the Vikings. But that being said, I have to go against them. I probably go against them for every game the rest of the year, because they just look so inept as an offensive unit that it's hard for me to envision them winning another game this season, although I'm sure they'll win one or two by osmosis. So I'm going to have to go with the Vikings.
Well, you know, and the game is here in Chicago, if that happens to change your mind. But
no, I mean, with no fans in attendance, it doesn't really make any difference where they're playing. But don't forget that the Vikings have won their last two games after a rough start. So they're on a winning streak, and the Bears are on a losing streak. So that's another reason why I'm going with Minnesota to win the game.
Yeah, you know, I do think the Bears will manage to win a couple more, you know, maybe two more games. You know, they've got to play the Lions again, who just always seem to shoot themselves in the foot. They have the Texans, who are in flux looking for a new coach. And then they also play the Jaguars down the line. And Jacksonville just, you know, I think they're 1-8, so they're not a very good team. So they have some winnable games on their schedule. It doesn't mean they'll win them, but they have some winnable games, so we'll have to see how that works out. But like I don't see them beating the Packers. You know, they got two games against the Packers. I honestly don't even know if they can beat Minnesota. You know, they still got two games left with them, and
right,
you would think maybe it would split, but the way Minnesota has played lately, I don't know.
So what you're saying, at best, all what the Bear fans kind of expect is at the best, a .500 record this year, if they're lucky.
Yeah, unless they can manage to pull off an upset, or if that last week of the season Green Bay just doesn't play anybody because it can't improve their position, you know, that may affect things differently. But yeah, I'm guessing 7-9, 8-8, best scenario for this team. You know, and again, you know, in reality, there's also a chance they could only beat Jacksonville and end up 6-10. You know, I mean,
that's
I could
true.
Honestly see the Lions pulling off the upset. And, you know, the Texans have Deshaun Watson, and if he has a good game, they could beat the Bears, you know, just that easily.
Yeah, and I would think that if the Bears win three more games this year, it'll be against Houston, Jacksonville, and Detroit. I don't see them winning any other games besides those three.
If the Packers decide, you know, like if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play the last week of the season and Green Bay sits their starters to get ready for the playoffs, I could see the Bears pull the upset there, you know, even if it would still be considered an upset. But yeah, if not, if Green Bay needs that game and Aaron Rodgers plays with the starters, the Bears ain't winning. They're not winning that game.
I know they play Green Bay the last game of the season, but is that a home game or a road game?
That one is, I just clicked off and I looked at it and I knew what it was and I went away from it. It is it's a home game. They're here in Chicago, so.
Not that it makes any difference, but
yeah.
I've been impressed with maybe one player the Bears have this year. you know, I have to give Santos a lot of props. I mean, the guy has impressed me. I'm serious when it comes to that. 12 out of the last 12, including some huge long field goals when the game was on the line. So is he going to continue playing that well?
Oh, you know, kickers are kind of hot and cold. So, you know, unfortunately, you never really know what you're going to get with them.
Yeah, you think about what is the last game he played for Tennessee. Now, how did that one work out for them?
He
was 0-for-4 that game, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's always such an odd thing. And, you know, for some reason, it's almost like a hitter going into a slump. They just seem to lose it. You know, and all of a sudden they just can't make field goals.
When are they going to get Kmet back in the action again? I mean, the guy, can't they find one play where he can probably catch a ball for 10, 12 yards? What's the issue with him?
Wait, who was that? Who are you looking to get back in?
Kmet.
Oh, Cole Kmet?
Yes.
You know, I don't know. You know, I mean, to be fair, Jimmy Graham has been pretty good, but you would think you would want your group pick out there getting some experience. Maybe with the new play caller, you know, it'll help out and he'll get some more targets.
Yeah, and this fellow that came in when Montgomery got hurt, Ball, is that his name? How does he look to you?
Yeah.
Does he look like he has promise?
You know, I mean, the way I kind of look at it is he's a third string running back for a reason. So I don't think there's much there. And, like the thing that's disappointing to me with that is they had a quality running back in Jordan Howard, but Matt Nagy didn't like him because he didn't fit the passing game.
Yeah.
So they got rid of him. You know, and now all he does in Miami is score touchdowns because he's the short yardage guy. But the Bears could really use that. So.
Yeah, Montgomery is occasionally shows flashes, but he's been a disappointment, certainly.
Yeah. You know, and Cohen, you know, Cohen will never be anything more than a change of pace guy. He can't be your every down back. As, you know, as talented as he is, I can't see him getting 15 or 20 rushes a game. I just don't think that works.
No, and is he going to be 100% sound for next season? That's a terrible injury that happened to him.
Yeah, that of course always becomes the other question, you know. So we'll have to see how that all goes, but you know, you who knows. But I did want to bring something up here before we end up off the air, because I had heard some rumors, and I kind of need to confirm or deny, because there has been some talk of you possibly leaving the podcast to take over Alex Trebek's job at Jeopardy. Can you tell us, are you going to be the new host?
Well, his first selection before he passed was Betty White, and I'm younger than Betty White, so maybe I would be a good selection.
Yeah, because I was wondering. You know, I used to watch the show every day when I was smart, but now that I'm a drooling idiot, I just can't keep up. So,
they taped some shows that maybe go through December 25th. Are they going to keep showing the shows where he's going to be doing? He's the moderator now that he's passed.
Yeah,
they
had 35 shows in the can that they're going to show with him as the host. So they'll be on for the next, 7 weeks? I guess they have 7 weeks of shows.
Yeah.
So we will get to see him a little bit longer. Have a good one.